A Playlist Original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we watch the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is MeToo.
And this week, we're checking out Fate, The Wink Saga on Netflix, The Sister on Hulu, Jan on Hulu, and Resident Alien on Sci-Fi.
So stay tuned to the end to find out what planet BJ is from.
Earth.
Beach, stop revealing the spoilers before we get to them.
Maybe Earth.
Ooh. So why don't we first go to Otherworld with Fate the Winx Saga?
Sure. Fate the Winx Saga, a new series on Netflix, is actually a coming-of-age journey for five fairies attending a school called Alfea. And this is a magical boarding school in the Otherworld. This is another place separate from where we are on Earth, which is the first world, where there are people who are learning to master their powers. They can control different elements, such as fire, wind, water, earth, and mental.
Yes, sort of.
Something like that. And this is actually a live-action take on an Italian cartoon called The Winx Club. So some people might be familiar with that. I believe it used to air on Nickelodeon. Now, in this new take, we're following Bloom Peters, played by Abigail Cohen. She is a 16-year-old fire fairy, and she was actually raised on Earth by human parents, and now she's attending Alfea to learn how to use her powers. And within her suite, she has some fairy roommates, including Stella, played by Hannah van der Westhuizen. She is a light fairy, and she's the second year kind of mentor character. There's Aisha. She is a water fairy, played by Precious Mustafa, and she is actually in the same room with Bloom, and so one of her first friends. There's Tara, an earth fairy, played by Elliot Salt, and she's rooming with Musa, a mind fairy, played by Alicia Applebaum. And we already out the gate find out that outside of Alfea, there are these terrifying creatures called the Burned Ones who are being held out by a barrier, but it doesn't seem like it's gonna take too long before they become a threat for the students. So MeToo, what were your initial thoughts when you entered this new fantasy teen drama a la Charmed?
It was very Charmed. It was very non-horror Nancy Drew, but it also had the elements of Harry Potter where Bloom is what she believes to be a regular schmegular degular human, and she is whisked away when she learns that she's a fairy. And she learns this from the headmistress Sarah, played by Eve Best, who convinces her to stay at the school. Right now, why Bloom is attending is to learn self-control. So I think that's an interesting take on a regular person learning that they have powers or are being taken to an institution to groom those powers, because she's actually not interested in the powers. She's not interested in the people there. She just wants to know how to do less harm with the great firepower that she has.
Yeah, and that's kind of when we dive into some of the mystery behind Bloom, because she claims that she has a long-lost fairy ancestor and she has a dormant magic bloodline, and so she's popped up with these fire powers. But there's some questions about, is that even possible? You mentioned that she wants to control her powers. We find out that when she first learned that she has fire abilities, it did not turn out well for those around her.
She almost set fire to her family.
She did set fire to her family.
True. She set fire to that rain. Speaking of, Aisha, her water-powered roommate, is the one who seems to be helping her learn about her past, learn about her powers, driving her to investigate how two humans could make such a powerful fairy. Aisha's power being water means that she will naturally be the control for Bloom until Bloom learns to control herself. We see Bloom, for whatever reason, testing out her powers in a forest surrounded by dry leaves, wood, and anything else that can help keep a fire going. And Aisha has to find her and then bring water out of the ground to put the fire out that Bloom started. And I think we're going to see Aisha do that a lot for her, putting fires out literally and figuratively.
Along with Tara and Musa, we see them toward the end of the episode also joining in to help Bloom. And it makes me wonder, with Bloom as our lead character, the person who's introducing us, the audience, to the fairy world, does she seem a bit selfish to you?
I think this is classic Netflix or any show where the lead character is, to me, not the most interesting character. She has this mystery behind her. Why is she so powerful? Why is her fire so powerful when she comes from humans? I honestly am not that interested in that mystery. I think the dynamics between her roommates are more interesting. Tara, her family worked at the school, so she grew up there and she knows the ins and outs of the place. That is fascinating to me because I wonder how the dynamic shifts when you matriculate there as a student versus being family of staff. Then she has a wild dynamic with Musa because Musa is an empath and Tara is incredibly insecure and fearful, and Musa has to suck up all of those emotions from Tara all the time to the point where she has to put on headphones to block out Tara's thoughts and everyone else's. With Aisha, I think that they're doing her a disservice if her character is, as it seems to me, going to be just the water to Bloom's fire, essentially.
True. And we have Stella, who I wonder if they're going to leave only as the mean girl.
Okay, I'm curious about Stella's powers. She is jealous of Bloom because Bloom has the attention of her crush, who is Stella's ex. That is Sky, played by Danny Griffin. And Stella said that for her suite mates, especially Bloom's safety, she should not sleep in the room with them, and she sleeps over in Danny's suite because she said her jealousy is dangerous. I wonder what that means. Even that piqued my interest more than whatever is going on in Bloom's background.
Maybe Bloom will get more interesting once she realizes that she's got to compete with these suite mates.
We do see Bloom have an interaction with a burned one. I think that will develop into a more interesting storyline. It's obviously not a coincidence that there are burned ones and her power is fire at a scale that seems to be unseen before.
Are you saying she burned everyone?
Maybe she is ground zero of the burned ones. I don't know. Or her lineage is.
Before we head into our ratings and final thoughts, I did just want us to quickly touch on some criticism that this show has had. So in the original animated version, there was a more diverse cast, with Musa and Flora, who is now Tara, were actually East Asian and Latina characters. For reasons we will never fully understand, Netflix casting has whitewashed part of the cast, which is unfortunate, especially for people who were familiar with the original versions of these fairies.
I didn't realize that. That's awful.
And now, after that awful note, let's head into our ratings for Fate: The Winx Saga on Netflix.
I do want to sit in that awful note for 1 second. My other question is, a lot of stuff has come out on Twitter about Black women on Netflix shows and other big network shows having to do and care for their own hair. And Aisha's power is water, and she wears braids, and they have her swimming in every episode, it seems.
Twice a day, she says.
Who is taking care of her braids when she's doing that? Because I have been on vacation wearing braids. I know the difficulty and upkeep of getting those braids wet every single day.
We see her swimming, and she just has her head
above the water
with no swimming cap. But okay.
Because we have to be concerned about the base of the braids, which will fuzz with the exposure to water, which people probably wouldn't want happen if they are acting on a show and their hair has to be consistent. It'll look different than when they were originally braided.
I guess she has magical hair as well.
I guess so. That's the power I want.
A hair fairy?
I do. Especially in quarantine, I'd need somebody to braid my hair. If a fairy could do it, or if I could do it, that'd be a beautiful thing. Okay, Beach. Now, on that note, do you want to watch more episodes of Fate: The Winx Saga on Netflix?
I would not watch again. I was actually very impressed with the special effects, and I do like this fantasy world that they've set up and are developing. As we hinted at, Bloom isn't inviting me into this world, and I don't know if her suite mates can carry that story when this really is Bloom's story and show. So for that reason, I'm going to pass. How do you feel?
As someone who doesn't really like this genre of television, my review is biased. So if you are like me and fantasy, sci-fi, this world is not necessarily your cup of tea, then I don't think this show is one that's worth your time. I have seen sci-fi and fantasy shows that make me want to watch more episodes. This isn't one of them. Now, with that said, I am a sucker for a cast of all young women, so I will watch at least one more episode just to see if they're able to grab my attention, but I don't know that I would recommend more episodes to people who are not Fantasy Hive.
So since you don't have an imagination and you don't like these whimsical things, how about we head to something a little more dark and gritty with The Sister on Hulu.
Okay, Beej, what happened?
So our whole premise, we meet Nathan, played by Russell Tovey, and on a rainy night, someone knocks on his door, and an unwelcome face from his past has returned. And that's when we meet Bob. And I'm just going to say this now. I really thought they made up this name for him, but I guess his name really is Bob.
Me too. I thought that was part of the mystery on the show, was that maybe it would be revealed who Bob is. Yeah. But it's Bob.
But his character really is Bob, played by Birdie Carvel. He's come back and he is bringing up a dark secret that he and Nathan know what happened to a young woman who went missing 3 years ago. Now you're saying, okay, generic mystery. Someone's gone. They know a secret. There's layers, people. Nathan married the missing girl's sister, and he doesn't want Bob to come back and shake things up because this sister has no idea that there is a connection between Nathan and her missing sister. And so now what we're going to see on this really exciting four-part series, which is actually inspired by a novel called Burial by Neil Cross, is that Nathan is going to have to deal with Bob shaking things up while he's trying to hide things from his wife, Holly, played by Amrita Acaria. And we're also going to have to find out what did happen to this sister, Elise. We only have seen a few glimpses. Me too. What was your first impression of this dark mystery series?
I thought that the show was really dark for a number of reasons. Well, I think people say for a number of reasons, but really there's just a couple. One, it is so creepy that he knows that something fishy happened with Elise's disappearance, yet he still grew an obsession for, tracked, and then married her sister Holly. That's gross and weird. It is also unsettling that Bob has an interest in Elise's disappearance beyond the fact that Elise is a human who is dead and who died because of nefarious means, potentially. He is interested in it as a paranormal investigator. So it is unsettling that his interest is in keeping their secret, but also in pursuing his passions and not because of any care for this human being. Third, this show is creepy because you can't trust anyone. Bob and Nathan are both very untrustworthy figures. Nathan is not a victim. Nathan is not a guy who got caught up. He married the sister of the person whom he knows more than he's letting on about their disappearance.
Yes, you bring up a lot of creepy but important points. So how about we dive a little bit more into Bob returning? You're right. Bob has this shared secret with Nathan. Originally, you start to think, okay, they're worried that someone might figure out that they were involved with Elise's disappearance. But as this episode goes on, and I'm sure as this miniseries continues, you find out that Bob, who is a paranormal expert, believes he's being haunted by Elise, and that that is more of the driving factor why he's returning to Nathan's life.
I would prefer if the reason that Nathan and Bob were caught up in this is that they're being eaten up by guilt, or even if there's no guilt, just fear that they'll be caught and will face consequences, even if they had nothing to do with her death. We don't know yet why she died. We do know that they know more about her disappearance than authorities know, so they could face consequences for that.
They were the last to see her.
But it's not out of fear or guilt. It is out of interest.
I'd say there's some fear.
Yes, but it is out of curiosity for whether she's haunting them. They listen to white noise together and they think it might be her. And you learn that they met because Nathan was working at a radio station where Bob was brought in as a paranormal expert.
Very creepy.
Yes.
You were mentioning how Nathan has formed this relationship with Holly, and we see in flashbacks how he timidly and nervously approaches Holly continuously to build this relationship. It brings up that question that who can we trust? So I'm curious, who do you trust? And do you think Holly will figure anything out? Because right now, she doesn't know about the connection between Nathan and Elise. And she just thinks Bob is some old mate that Nathan is reconnecting with.
For her safety, I hope Holly doesn't find anything out anytime soon until maybe she's away from everyone. As you said, we watch in flashbacks their courtship. And that's another unsettling part of the show. And I think what makes the show overall so good at what it's trying to do in creeping you out, because they paint him as this nervous guy approaching her. And for a second, you're, I think, made to believe this is cute. He is really trying to get up the nerve to ask her out, or he's really trying to get to know her. And you see them on a date together, being awkward and cute and getting to know each other. And until on that date, she says, I haven't done this in 3 years, go out because of what happened. And she starts to explain to him the story of her sister's disappearance. That's when you're brought back to earth, if you will. And you're like, oh my God, that's the guy. You're sitting in front of the guy. And that was so unsettling that for a moment you go, oh, this is cute. And then you're like, no, he's awful. This is awful.
Because he just sits there calmly like, oh, that is such bad news. Your sister?
It's also, I think, difficult to do bad acting while acting. It's layers of acting where you are your character, but then you are your character trying to be another character poorly.
So is that you giving props to Russell Tovey?
Yes, I think he did that well. And I think he did it well when Bob showed up and she was like, who is this guy? And he was like, Bob? Who is Bob? I thought he did that well, much better than I just did.
I mean, I thought it was pretty similar where you both were not convincing, in my opinion.
Not at all. But I thought that that was well done. To answer your question, that leads me to not trust anyone. I trust Holly in the sense that she doesn't know anything and she wasn't involved in any of the bad things. So she herself is not a bad actor. But everyone else, I don't trust.
That's fair. I think I trust Elise.
Oh, that's true. And if she really is haunting them, I trust her more because I love that she's like, oh, my work is not done. I'm gonna make these people stressed out till the end.
Here we go. Do you see that light flicker? That was me.
Yeah, tell Cersei it was me.
So, Me Too, what is your rating for The Sister on Hulu?
Y'all, this is a scary show. And what you'll notice in a theme for 3 of the 4 shows that we watched this week, that BJ had me watch scary things with blood and monsters and ghosts. So I sat down this week and I was like, huh, BJ is really trying to scare the pants off of me. In this case with The Sister, even though I don't like horror, I thought it was really good. And I really want to know what happened to Elise. I will keep watching. As long as it is not sympathetic to Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do not want that character being humanized in any way.
You don't want him to be the hero?
No.
That's fair.
What's your rating?
Pretty similar. I would watch again, seriously. I like the dark mystery, the thriller. I actually really appreciate that it's a small cast, because I think with a mystery like this, it's going to give us time to focus on Nathan, Bob, and Holly.
Mm-hmm.
Also explore the past, because there's a whole nother storyline in flashbacks. And it's also a miniseries, 4-part miniseries, so very digestible and easy to get through. So I'm going to keep watching, and hopefully whatever conclusion comes from Elise's disappearance will be satisfying.
I hope so too.
So let's switch from a dark, mysterious disappearance to a bright, fun mockumentary comedy.
Maybe a surreality show?
I like that better. Tell us about it.
So you're talking about Jan on Hulu. Jan Arden plays a humorous, fictionalized version of herself as she navigates her declining music career and her love life ending and some family issues. We also meet her longtime manager, Todd, played by Jason Blicker, and a new young hotshot manager, Kale, played by Elena Huatko. In this first episode, we get an introduction to what we might call Jan's rock bottom in her finances, in her love life, and potentially with her family life too. So, Beej, how did you feel about it?
I thought that this was funny. And I always will applaud people who are willing to laugh at themselves. I think that is an important skill. And with Jan playing a fictionalized version of herself, to some extent, we know that they are heightening certain aspects of her life and characteristics and fictionalizing some as well. But I think she's also putting herself out there to be this sad former star who just wants a break and thinks that she has this grand image of herself in her mind. And we clearly see throughout the show, no one else has that same image, except maybe Todd.
Todd does really see the best for her. It reminded me of Lisa Kudrow in The Comeback, where she plays Valerie Cherish, who is like Lisa Kudrow, that she was on a hit sitcom a long time ago and is now trying to find fame again. In this case, with Jan, she's not playing another character, she's playing herself. So she weaves in parts of her own story, her own successes and failures. And it's part of this slate of shows that have been coming from Canada where we lack contextual knowledge, but we still are supposed to appreciate the humor. So Schitt's Creek, we're not Canadian. I'm sure there are jokes in there that we're missing, but it's a hit. It's super funny. Letterkenny, we lack a ton of contextual knowledge for that town. But the show is a hit. It was very successful on Hulu. It's one of our most popular reviews that we've done. It is just very popular here in the US. Jan is interesting because you not only have to have some contextual knowledge of Canada, you're supposed to have some contextual knowledge on her. And I think it's a testament to how funny the show is that I had no idea who Jan Arden was, and I know my mama does not know who Jan Arden is, but I still thought it was very funny to watch this star in decline, even though I didn't know about her when she was shining brightest.
That's a really kind of funny, but also important point that we never knew her as a celebrity. We still don't know her as a celebrity, but we can enjoy and just accept her saying, you know, I am a famous singer. And we just shrug our shoulders. Sure, Jan.
Ha, sure, Jan.
And keep watching the show because it is funny. Her antics from getting caught up in a barbed wire fence to getting paid with giant wheels of cheese to having people rent her house so often that she has made a custom sheet to cover a self-portrait of herself because people don't want to look at her face like that.
It was a beautiful self-portrait, but I understand why she would have to have a custom sheet made. It was a huge dedication to herself. I fell in love with a character that we meet at the top of the episode who is renting the house for a star that we later find out is Feist, Kale, her potential new manager. She's been with Todd for decades, but he's not aggressive enough. I think he himself is on a bit of a decline, and Kale is coming in with fresh blood, trying to inject new life into Jan's career. And I'm sure that Kale was your favorite character.
Kale was my favorite character. I think she can provide a lot of youthfulness for Jan, and she's not going to mix up Jan's Twitter and Tinder account because you don't want to swap those photos.
I forgot about that joke. Todd accidentally posted a nude of Jan to Twitter because he also runs her Tinder. We also meet her family. Max is her sister, played by Zoe Palmer, who keeps having kids. That is the plot point about her. And so she is pregnant yet again and determining how that new child might affect her life. And we also meet her mom, Nora, played by Deborah Grover, who might be experiencing some memory loss.
And I think this was really important to see the family aspect for Jan. And what now sticks out to me, this is a comedy versus Fate, which was a drama. But in this case, Jan being selfish is actually an appealing aspect to this comedy.
It fits.
Yeah, she steals cupcakes from her nieces, I believe.
Yes, from their lunchboxes.
And I like that. I'm okay with it.
I loved that scene where she managed to get into the cancer festival, and there was the running joke of her and her manager saying, I got you cancer, festival. I got cancer, festival. And she gets to the backstage and the security guard doesn't recognize her. She doesn't have the correct badge and she has difficulty getting in. And her competition for the slot is Sarah McLachlan, another Canadian star. So...
Whom we recognize
because of the pet commercials. So it is, that's exclusively the reason I know who that is. So for that reason, I think it's good that the show is centered around her because you see her successes and failures and they're interesting and they're funny. With that said, do you want to watch more episodes of Jan? Do you want to see if she's able to crawl her way back to some fame and recognition?
I do want to watch more episodes. I would watch this again casually. I don't think I care that much about her successfully making a comeback. I am comfortable just watching her stumble through more episodes. What I really appreciate is that this is a half-hour comedy, and so it's very easy to get through. And all the jokes hit really well, so I think that made it feel even faster, which is good. How do you feel?
I would watch again seriously. Y'all, if BJ likes a comedy, I love a comedy because BJ, you know, doesn't like joy, laughter, smiling. So with that said, Jan is very funny. Goes a long way if BJ likes a comedy. I ended up watching the second episode right after the first one, which we typically don't like to do, so we can just review the pilot by itself. But I was like, I may as well roll into the next one, and I am definitely going to watch more this weekend. As BJ said, it's a 30-minute show, so it's also just super easy to knock out a bunch of episodes.
So me too, do you want to stop laughing for a bit and go to something that's a little more dark with a science fiction twist and a hint of comic book essence?
I guess you had me watch it.
Okay, now.
BJ's talking about Resident Alien on Sci-Fi. Firefly star Alan Tudyk plays Dr. Harry Vanderspiegel, who is an alien that crash landed in Patience, Colorado. And he learns English using Law and Order and now has to assume the role of town doctor. The former town doctor died, and Harry's first case is figuring out what happened. We also meet the sheriff Mike, played by Corey Reynolds, his deputy Liv, played by Elizabeth Bowen, his nurse Asta, played by Sarah Tomko, and the mayor, Hawthorne, played by Levi Fahler. So, Beach, how did you feel about this show? Because to me, as a peek behind the curtain listeners, I thought this show was a very dark comedy. Based on the premise, I thought I would just be laughing the whole time, whereas I actually felt a lot of discomfort, a lot of gross out moments. Maybe it's because it's based on a comic where more of that happens. So I'm curious for you, as a comic book person, how did you feel about this one?
I think I was a little more familiar with the show from some trailers that I watched. I knew it had that darker spin to it, especially with Alan Tudyk's character, Dr. Vanderspiegel, having this kind of monotonous vibe with the lack of social skills. So I think that helped me going into it to not expect laugh out loud comedy. But it is dark. There's murder, attempted murder, there's dissections of human bodies, and there's also violence, physical combat. Despite all of those dark elements, I think that it can still be an enjoyable comedy due to an alien, like a literal extraterrestrial, who is trying to fit in. The whole episode, he wants to be accepted as a human, more so that people won't be suspicious of him than him actually wanting to develop bonds with people. But I think that contrast helps cut the darkness and add that light comedy element to help at least me get through it.
It is funny to see him use Law and Order lingo.
Ta-dum!
Yes, the dun-dun when he is asked to be a coroner. And it is fun to see him at the town bar cutting up with the locals, trying to understand the local customs.
Can we pause for a second on that? How many shots did all of those people take, alien or human?
I never understand that in movies and TV shows when people knock back alcohol like it is glasses of water and they just take several shots. I also don't understand how when he was impaired, he didn't accidentally reveal his secret. He just revealed it to the child that he tried to kill, but no one else. And it's because the child knows. So he has a cover as he is pretending to be a human, and only, I think he said, 0.01% of humans can see past the genetic structure that he uses to cover up his physical form, and a child in the town that is maybe 9 years old can see past it. And so he sets out to kill that kid while drunk. And that's the only thing we see him do threatening his cover.
Just to like hit on that point again, confusing because in the beginning, don't we see him literally transform into a human?
Yes.
Rather than, I don't know, putting on a costume, it looked like his body changed to human.
It did.
So I don't get how the kid can see past that.
Let's talk about a couple other people in town. Namely his nurse, Asta. I thought she was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I warmed up to her, as Harry did.
And that's another dark part of the episode, though. She warms up to Harry specifically to use his pickup truck to leave her ex-husband. And we learn that her ex-husband is physically abusive. And then we also see Harry almost murder the ex-husband.
And she was like, wait, stop.
The funniest parts to me were the moments between the side characters. So the deputy, the sheriff, the nurse, the mayor, them debating within themselves who's going to tell the doctor's wife that the doctor died. And then she finds out in a horrifying way because none of them had really gotten the bravery up to go tell her.
Blame the mayor. He was supposed to call her.
That's true. I do blame the mayor. The mayor looks like a very young upstart.
Yeah, he's probably fresh out of some post-college internship. He got this position and he really thinks he can make some change in this small town.
So before we get to the rating, we learn that this alien had a device that he was trying to drop off on Earth and continue flying away. And he crash lands instead. So now he is desperately trying to find this device.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see happening in his mission?
Well, he's made it clear he had no intentions of staying on Earth. So he wants to just get this device, probably activate it, and head home. I see that he's going to develop this relationship with Asta, as well as the other townspeople, and then fall in love with humanity. And maybe he'll give up his alien mission and not want to go back home. Might not even find the device, and will just try and live as Harry forever. What do you think?
I wonder if there's going to be a fake out where both ways, where he develops his affinity for humans. Maybe there's a decision point coming up in the season where he could activate this device and leave. And we think for a moment that he's going to stay with the humans and he decides to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he has a change of heart and comes back and saves them.
Ooh, or maybe he takes his favorite humans with him when he leaves.
Now that's a happy medium.
There you go.
Resident Alien, hire us.
We could just do alternate endings for the show. We could do some fanfic, listeners, write in to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com.
Are you going
to
take our listeners' ideas?
if you want us to write fanfic for Resident Alien, we could write some short stories. If there's an audience who wants it.
That's for sure. Y'all, BJ is a very good fiction writer.
And Me Too has amazing dreams. And once we start writing those down, we'll have a lot of source material.
That is true. I do have very cool dreams. And then I call you in the morning and then tell you about them. And then I forget.
It's all gone.
On that note, do you want to watch more episodes of Sci-Fi's Resident Alien?
I think I'm going to keep giving it a try. So for now, would watch again casually for maybe 2 more episodes. And I'll see if I am still interested. Because I think right now, Harry and Asta's relationship is what's drawing me into the show. And I want to see if there's anything else, especially with the other townsfolk, that will spark my interest. Because there is also a young woman who potentially wants to be involved romantically with Harry.
True. Okay, so my rating will be me and the other people in our listener community who are not so into shows like this will hold on an email from you to let us know if it's worth watching. Right now, I don't think I want to watch any more episodes, and I don't know that I would recommend it to non-Sci-Fi Hive. But as you know, I do love the show Firefly, which Alan Tudyk starred in, and I would recommend Firefly to anyone, including people who don't really go up for sci-fi that often.
Okay, well, look out for that email from me.
I will. We all will.
How ominous. You can also look for more of our content by heading to our website at thepilotpodcast.com, and you can subscribe to us on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at thepilotpod, and you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, Resident Alien fanfic, and your requests for BJ's Resident Alien newsletter to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.